Hello and welcome to It Had to Be Said. This episode is going to start a series on a document called The Red Pill. This first episode will discuss context and background into what the Red Pill means, what this document is, and we'll delve into the introduction. In the future, I'll create other podcast based on chapters and add context and current events if necessary. So the red pill. Now, this topic in and of itself is a topic that could create many, many different episodes, books, and there's a lot of great work that already exists on it. So I'm not going to go too far in depth on what the red pill means in terms of a definition or in cultural context, but I will provide a brief overview. If you've never heard of this before, I would suggest that you all use other reliable, good sources to find out what the red pill is, because it can branch out into many other topics, like the alt-right, the manosphere, Gamergate, and some other very important topics that aren't going to be covered here. But the definition of the red pill, now I grabbed this from Urban Dictionary because I figured that would be a generic, you know, somewhat culturally attuned site. So the red pill. We have a quote here from The Matrix. This is your last chance. After there is no turning back, you take the blue pill, the story ends, and you wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes, Morpheus. And this is the essence of what being pilled means, right? So the red pill is supposed to mean that this is the truth. And even the term rabbit hole is a term that's used often in conspiracy circles. I'm thinking specifically QAnon, when they talk about, you know, the truth and you go down the rabbit hole. Red pill has become a popular phrase among cyberculture and signifies a free thinking attitude and a waking up from a normal life of sloth and ignorance. Red pills prefer the truth, no matter how gritty and painful it may be. So on the outset, that doesn't sound too bad. You know, if I think of maybe things like Friedrich Nietzsche talked about with true world theories. I think of things, you know, maybe Karl Marx talked about with historic material realities versus, I don't know, religion, for instance, right? Historical materialism. And so, yes, you know, we want the gritty truth, however painful it may be. However, the context in which the right has taken ownership of this, you know, so, you know, what are their truths, right? What does this mean if you say the red pill in 2021, given all the cultural and social and political, you know, context surrounding it? Well, again, I'm not going to go down the whole kind of definition of this, but some things popped in my head initially. You know, the typical right-wing guys, Jordan Sather, 4chan crowd, people on Twitter, QAnon, some basic things like IQ differences, for instance. And when you talk about IQ differences, that gets into race eventually. So that's a painful truth, right? White genocide, a painful truth. You know, immigration, especially, I mean, everywhere in the Western world, but the spectrum, you know, might be the United States and UK, France, you know, going all the way to Eastern Europe with Hungary and Poland. The idea there's a secret cabal running the world. In the 90s, this kind of transitioned away from being anti-Semitic outright to being a New World Order. And of course, the first President Bush was infamous for saying that. The context is totally missing, however, in the quote, but it's something that conspiracy theorists latched onto and eventually the right took ownership of. But really, you know, the one world theory is an old anti-Semitic trope that we know about. And we'll revisit this because in the 40s and 50s in Germany, in Franco Spain, out anti-Semitism, the lines blurred with anti-communism as well. Of course, Lenin and Karl Marx coming from Jewish heritage, even though they obviously weren't practicing. And from that lens, right, these hard truths spread out into just, you know, whomever you disagree with, essentially, progressives, liberals, are part of this conspiracy. Satanists are involved with this, and they lead pedophile rings. And this is all part of the New World Order and you know, this conglomeration of conspiracies. There are two genders. And if you don't subscribe to that, you're a degenerate, basically. There's mental illness. You're enabling someone's mental illness. Yeah, these are just some pills that, you know, come to my mind from interactions I've had with people on Telegram, 4chan, you know, just the far right crowd. I want to say the extremist crowd, but to be honest, they're not really the extremist of the right. I think that that's kind of more just maybe center right of the modern Republican Party. The extremists, I suppose, are people that act like the base that are actually out there practicing for the revolution. But even that line blurred on January 6th. This document is interesting because it talks about these things, and it also gets into vaccines. So of course, with COVID, you know, vaccines as well as shutdown protocol being, you know, some type of social engineering to eventually create subservience in the masses. And this has been the hook, I think, for a lot of people outside of maybe Save the Children with QAnon. But if you had told me 5 years ago that wellness people on Instagram that live in LA would be rubbing shoulders with white nationalists, I would think that that's not something that I would put my money on happening. However, here we are, right? So with all the work done on this topic, right? Again, why are we making another one? Because I did say that there's a lot of great resources out there. And there are some podcasts, you know, I think specifically, I don't speak German. Now there are a lot of great podcasts, but that podcast in particular, I think does a great job through a few different episodes. They have one episode specifically called The Red Pill, but they just in general do a great job at approaching the topic in a serious way. QAnon Anonymous is another one that kind of talks around the red pill. I don't know if they did an episode specifically on it, but at least, you know, the topic being QAnon, it's somewhat inherent in it. But, you know, I want to create this podcast. I have some goals, right? And I think it's important, one, to highlight this document and the significance of this document, and I'll get into the story of it, but you know, it's important to understand who your enemy is And I suppose to understand that you do have an enemy, you know, this isn't a situation where, you know, like President Obama's famous line, agree to disagree. You can't just agree to disagree with people that hold these opinions and want to see them brought into reality. You know, you can't just agree to disagree on Charlottesville. You can't agree to disagree on January 6th. And really, even before those events, it was somewhat of a false narrative because there's a laundry list. But let's just bring up a few. Timothy McVeigh, right? Eric Rudolph. I mean, we can stop there. There's a list. Southern Poverty Law Center did a really great job on the Patriot Movement, if you go onto their site, where they listed individual actions in a timeline. But just those two people, you know, they represent bringing into the reality of what, you know, this document talks about. And honestly, what tons of Facebook groups are discussing right now. You know, it's not even on these more obscure sites. It's just on your mainstream platforms. And so it's important to know that. It's okay to disagree with people. It's important to know where these ideas come from, because if you don't have a background with this, if this isn't something, you know, if you don't work at the Southern Poverty Law Center, for instance, and you are confronted with these ideas, I think a natural reaction is to just kind of move it along, because they come from such a a place in which most people don't really exist, right? So it's important to know where these things are coming from so that you just don't overlook them. And, you know, I think an example of that, every year, social media, even comedians and stuff, it's always, you know, you always have your drunk uncle at Thanksgiving, that kind of archetype, you know, or there's someone in your family that's a little screwy and they have a few drinks and they start talking about lizard people or something. And I think the natural inclination is to say, well, you know, they're just like that. You know, it's just how they are. Just move the conversation on to sports or the weather or something. But you really can't do that in good conscience with these topics that we're discussing now, these far right conspiracies, because understanding where they originate from, which like a document like this, the Red Pill, then you understand just how damaging they are, just how vile and repulsive they are. And even though, you know, your drunk uncle or whatever you want to say might just be saying these things because they read them online or something, know that there are people, and we've seen it. I mean, it's not even something that really needs to be described anymore in metaphor. You know, we saw it in January 6th. We saw it when militia men in Michigan talked about trying to kidnap our government officials. It also happened in Maryland. We saw it in the Washington State House that was stormed by far right people. I mean, maybe, you know, again, 5 years ago, I think that describing things like this required some level of metaphor because the actions that had occurred weren't really publicly known. But now they are. And so they're very easy to relate to. And I think that there's a direct line now in people's minds. So knowing where these ideas originate from and just how dangerous they are important, because it can inform you and how you choose to react to them. You know, I think it's different if you approach it like, well, yeah, my uncle is a little crazy. He watches, you know, Coast to Coast and he talks about lizard people and stuff. That's one way to approach it. But another way to approach it is like, what you're saying right now, you know, I love you, but what you're saying is anti-Semitic. And even if you're not, that it's, you need to know that that's where that comes from, right? And if you're not anti-Semitic, then you shouldn't be saying the things you're saying. Right. You can't not be anti-Semitic and also saying what you're saying. They don't jive. You're being a hypocrite. Seeing how these pieces are normalized by respectable conservatives, and I never thought that I would see it like it is today. And in some ways, it's helpful, I suppose. The veil has been pulled back. People are being more honest than they used to. There is an infamous interview with Lee Atwater before he died, and he worked on the Nixon and Reagan campaigns. And, you know, he discussed how you can't use the N-word anymore, talking about Reagan's Southern strategy. So early 80s, right? Late 70s, early 80s. And he says, you can't say the N-word anymore. That hurts you, right? So you don't say that. What you do is you say things around that. You say things like busing. You say things like taxing, right? You say things that are code, because you can't say the N-word anymore, right? But you can say busing. You can say taxes. And we all know in practice what that means, right? Nowadays, you don't even need to do that. Right. I mean, today is July 2nd, 2021. And just recently we had Republican politicians directly connected to Nick Fuentes and his America First stuff. I mean, so it's nice in the way that we don't need to explain this because it's out in the open. Right. And then lastly, recognizing aspects of this on the internet, and this kind of goes back to that conversation where your aunt posts something, you know, with an American flag and all this stuff. If you understand where this message is coming from, right, then you can understand what, honestly, this person might be sharing inadvertently, right? You know, I explained this recently to somebody who had posted a, you know, I forget what they had posted, but it was one step away from white genocide. And it was something along the lines of, it was this meme that says something along the lines of, you know, it's okay to keep and maintain your traditions. And it showed this, you know, white lady. And she had some traditional headdress on in like a field with grain. You know, this is what all the radical traditionalists get sexually aroused by. And yeah, I really had to explain to this person that, you know, what this is. I mean, if this image were on 4chan instead of Facebook, it would just say, you know, it's okay to be white. And honestly, you could probably get away with that on Facebook. Yeah, you know, their policies are so archaic and focused on key images and keywords that you could probably post that on Facebook and not have it be taken down. And even the idea of, you know, it's okay to be white, because you know, I've seen those on other sites. I mean, that's it's this white genocide stuff, right? It's the insinuation that anyone is claiming otherwise, you know, and that's somehow that's endangered, you know. Basically, being a Nazi is standing up for something, right? So important to just recognize, you know, it might be third generation. It might not be, you know, white genocide is happening. It might be one of these things like, you know, it's okay to keep your tradition, which is, you know, one generation or iteration away from it's okay to be white, which is another iteration away from white genocide. So again, this series from here on out is going to take on a chapter or multiple chapters to give listeners insight into the far right culture using a document not meant to be public facing. It was really meant to be spread among the choir, right? The people that were already pilled. Some topics may take longer to unpack than others. So some of these might be multiple chapters, some might just be one. But it is important to realize and internalize that much of mainstream conservatism allows this, and in some cases borrows from this. Maybe not directly, but in spirit at least, and within context. And there is really no distinct difference between the core bullet points of this document and really the mainstream Republican Party in 2021. Unlike the left, in which there's numerous subcultures ranging, anarchists to communists to progressives to mainstream Democrats, for whom have distinct starts and endpoints in their ideologies, many of which oppose each other. There's clear chasms and ideological differences. That the far right more or less agree with general concepts that you see at CPAC. It's just more of a spectrum from how far and to whom these things apply. And an example might be, at CPAC, you can talk about migrants being treated a certain way, right? Or what they would call rioters. However, you're not going to have that against maybe citizens, right? Or people that they view as being good patriots. However, on that spectrum, some would extend the treatment to African-American communities, whether it's out and out racism or whether they're saying it's just crime, right? LGBT communities, pronouns, right? People who are US citizens. So it's a spectrum, right? It's a spectrum, but it's not chopped up like the left, where there's actual opposing ideologies. And I mean, honestly, not really an overarching theme. On the right, ultimately, I think you do have themes. You have these themes of good and evil, steeped within Christianity, nationalism, and within that, definitely race. And on that spectrum, it might not be that I believe in biological superiority, although that's on that spectrum. But it might be I accept people of other races if they conform to my worldviews and how I think, things should be done. So there's a homogeny, right? A spectrum. And there is this common cause, whether they are pilled on, lockdown procedures or race or what have you. So that's going to be the introduction piece to the Red Pill, this series, and how it's going to be organized. So from here on out, I'm going to focus on this document. Before I get into the document, there's one last thing that we need to talk about, and that is, what is this document? Where did I find it, and why am I using it? So I like to see conversations, what's going on with the opposition? What are they talking about? And I was on 4chan. I was gonna say 8chan, but it had been taken down and become 8kun. So I was on 4chan and politically incorrect and talking to a Nazi, straight up, Nazi flag as their symbol and everything. And I asked just the board, right? How do you pill people? Because I wanted to know how they did it. Obviously, I don't want to, but I was just curious to see if anyone would give up their power level and, describe to me their process. And by power level, I mean, people will hide their level of racism, anti-Semitism, misogyny. However, if they feel comfortable, you know, then they'll speak more openly about it. And I just spoke to the right person. They opened the world up to me, and I was directed to a BitChute in which I was able to download this document from a server in New Zealand, I believe. It was all very sketchy. I made sure to save off like 15 copies and delete all the originals and sweep my computer for viruses, et cetera, afterward. However, so I had this document called the Red Pill, and it isn't as if this is like the playbook or something, but it's an artifact. You know, it's something that's not meant for someone like me to have, and it's not meant for people like you to hear. So while it's not doctrine, it's not a platform, it's not something, you know, that people get into a smoky room and look at, it is symbolic of many of the topics that these people do gather, not in smoky rooms, but on image boards and groups and Telegram, etc., Gab, to discuss with one another. And I had it. I didn't know what to do with it. It's not really something that you share. So I figured I'd dissect it. And I'm going to be careful to not espouse the ideology, but instead use it more in a way to examine how the right thinks and where they're coming from, assuming that a lot of this stuff is what it is that they believe. Okay, so let's get into the introduction then. Introduction of the Red Pill. This starts off with a paragraph, and the initial paragraph is about Jeffrey Epstein. And this makes sense to me because, you know, if you're going to pill someone, if you're going to have them accept the reality, in quotes, that there are these, you know, secret, satanic, evil pedophile rings led by, you know, communists, et cetera, et cetera. If you're going to go down that road, you need a place to start, and you can't jump right in with lizard people and, you know, adrenochrome and stuff. Adrenochrome is a conspiracy kind of tied to QAnon, but it's just essentially blood libel. And if you don't know what that is, you know, look it up, but because there's a lot to it that you should know about. But just in short, it's an old anti-Semitic conspiracy. So, you know, Jeffrey Epstein is a nice way in because it was something that was public. It was something that was on the news. It's something that mainstream people would know about. So this introduction begins with Jeffrey Epstein and discussing, you know, his essentially, you know, sex trafficking rings. And then there's a cartoon, and the cartoon is, it's like a Simpsons cartoon that's been altered with the face of an actor, and the actor's name is Isaac Cappy. And in this cartoon are all these names of famous people on the chalkboard. It's that beginning scene of The Simpsons where Bart's writing on the chalkboard. And Isaac Cappy was an actor and musician, and he claimed to have provided names of politicians and actors involved in satanic pedophile cults. And he committed suicide. And so the way this is presented in context with Jeffrey Epstein is that, you know, this is a conspiracy, right? Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself, and neither did Isaac Cappy. And so this is important too, because now Isaac Cappy is a little bit more off the board, but he was still an actor. He was still in major movies, you know, Marvel movies even. However, he was also on shows like InfoWars near the end. And so, you know, you can draw that kind of more, I don't know, shady of a character into a general conversation with Jeffrey Epstein, who everybody knows about. And you're also bringing in this idea of sex trafficking, and then that transitioning to, you know, pedophilia and Satanism with this guy Cappy. But overall, a conspiracy, right? And so the very first lines of this red pill, which is kind of ironic, you know, seeing the truth is really seeing a conspiracy. Cappy left a message on his Instagram before he committed suicide, and in it, he apologized to Jesus Christ, he apologized to Donald Trump, he apologized to the QAnon movement. He said, "I have not been a good guy. In fact, I've been a pretty bad guy throughout most of my life." He also said that he did not join the Illuminati and that he had not been MK-Ultra'd. MK-Ultra is often used on the right, and it officially applies to experiments and programs led by the CIA back in the 50s and 60s, but it's somewhat of a verb, like an action word on the right. So, all right, you know, why is this red pill document starting out with Isaac Cappy? Because it lays the groundwork for following the conspiracies. And moving on from that cartoon and that opening paragraph with Jeffrey Epstein, other names are brought up. There are conspiracies with Bill Clinton, as well as Seth Rich, and a bunch of other people that I'm not really going to get into because I don't want to spread them inadvertently, but all of these are you know, that these people are Satanists, they're pedophiles, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess, you know, now's the time to take a moment, because we've already covered a lot of things, right? And this is just the you know, unpacking just the introduction to this and kind of why these topics are chosen in the introduction. In the Critical Race Theory podcast I made, I talked about how integral conspiracy thinking is to right-wing ideology. And this is true today. Before QAnon, before election fraud, before alternative facts, before Black Lives Matter and Antifa, you know, before the what we have now, in the earlier 2000s, it was Islam, right? It was that, you know, Islam is going to take over the United States and Sharia law is going to take over. And there were prayer mats found on the Mexican border, kind of, you know, combining the anti-immigrant sentiment with this fear of Islam. So, you know, before all of this, it was that. And before Islam, really, it was the satanic panic of the 80s. You know, there were other things mixed in there too, of course. I guess you can't leave out the Clintons. I mean, there's so many. Before the satanic panic, it was just, you know, anti-communism, Cold War, right? The boomers. And yeah, so all this propaganda and all these conspiracies are integral to right-wing thinking. And, you know, this was true in a lot, but this is true in Germany, in the Weimar Republic, right? The stabbed in the back theory. But it is core to all right-wing beliefs that at some level, there's a conspiracy of evil for which they are fighting. And this is fundamentally different than what you might say about the left. You know, I could hear some centrists saying, well, yeah, but there's people on the left that think all rich people are evil too, you know? And maybe, but not on an ideological level. You know, there are people that might, there are discussions to be had about whether or not socially we want to allow, you know, billionaires to exist. But that type of thing, right, is different to this idea that you're fighting against evil, right? That there's a conspiracy, that you are justified, that you are the virtuous one, and that you are being taken advantage of because of some behind the scenes secret cabal. And in this document, it starts out with some soft pills, some things that are easy to take, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, Bill Clinton. But then it gets more and more extreme. So I think that, you know, in essence, we looked at a definition of what, you know, red pill is from the Urban Dictionary. And of course, I said we're not going to go on that road because there's a lot of different branches from that road, you know, and they're all racist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, etc. But I think in essence, you know, that is the red pill. The red pill, whatever, you know, toxic route you're going down that you think you're finding a truth in, the essence of being pilled is really just buying into a conspiracy theory. And again, you know, before the internet existed, I mean, you know, back to Franco, Spain, or the Weimar Republic, and even before that, this idea of conspiracy has been a core concept of the right. So the introduction goes on. This means, according to the PDF, that Satanists are trying to overthrow God and replace him with the language is well, it's just there's poor grammar, but basically that humans are trying to replace God, right? So replacing God with themselves, and why would they want to do that? To enslave humanity. And my question, anytime, just if I'm kind of being a jerk, it's like, well, why would you want to enslave humanity? It seems like a lot of work. Like, why don't you just go have fun? Well, here's why. This, according to the PDF, is why elites want to rule over people so bad. It's entrenched in revelations, basically, in the Bible. So I want to say kind of an extreme fundamentalist view of Christianity, but I mean, not really. I mean, it's Revelations is in the Bible. It's not like it's some secret book that you have to, you know, buy from I don't know, some site that's unlisted from Google. I just think it's taking what the Bible says literally. So it's not really extreme. And according to Gallup, 50% of Republicans claim to be highly religious. And what that means, I mean, when you're already asking a group of people what it means to be highly religious, I think that might be, to an agnostic person, somewhat extreme. And this is above the national average of 40%. And in that same Republican pool, 61% of people asked said that they were also conservative. Again, much more than the national average of 35%. And I think more to the point, Pew Research in 2014, so it's a little bit dated, but found that 82% of Republicans are Christian. So, you know, working backwards with those numbers, if you say 82% of Republicans are Christian, and 50% of Republicans are highly religious, that then, you know, somewhere within, so, you know, 50% of that 82%, right? So somewhere in the 40 percentile range of that population that claim to be Christian would, in other words, be seeing themselves as very Christian. And so it, I think, in other words, you know, being able to take something like Revelations seriously, in which, you know, the devil is a real entity, and that the things that are said in Revelations, that he is going to come in the form of a peaceful leader that unites the world, is a literal thing. And to many people on the right, that is the New World Order. And that's why this is how they can thread the needle of seeing people, you know, protesting for immigrant rights or against police brutality, as actually being, you know, maybe at best useful idiots, and at worst, well, like they say here, members of this kind of far left Satanist cabal that seek to bring hell on earth and oppress everybody. So moving on, and guys, this is the introduction. Okay, so moving on. The stakes are massive, according to this PDF. The USA is entering a legitimate chance at full-blown civil war come winter. So they're talking about, they're given the time frame of when this was created, this PDF, they would be talking about the winter of 2021, so a few months from now. In which you will likely be forced to take sides. It will become a global conflict. How much is fought with arms, economy, resources, and how much with spirit is still up to question. And, you know, I don't think so. I disagree with the PDF. I think maybe since the creation of this PDF, that's not been the case. How much of this will be fought with arms, economy, resources versus spirit? I mean, January 6th, the Capitol was literally there was. Let me put it this way when describing this, because there's a trend, also with kind of moderate people, to downplay what happened January 6th at the Capitol building. I mean, forget all the other things. Forget all the things I mentioned earlier. Just that one event. There's, I think, in discussion that this view that the people that participate in that weren't dangerous. That the people that participated in that were kind of there for a good time, were there because they thought they had the right to incorrectly just enter the building because it was public property, that they were there for the good guys, that these are the law-abiding citizens, essentially, and that things got a little bit out of hand. But I think, you know, mainstream Republicans would even go out and say that you can't blame it. Because it's not their fault that they were the ones reacting. Because the left is really to blame because they are so out of line. It's important. Well, I mean, this is many things, right? But it's, you know, boys will be boys kind of thing. One of the most significant and important buildings within the United States political system, government, was breached. And there's no way to minimize that. One of the most important, most well-guarded buildings within the United States government was breached. That had never happened before. And that breach paused official government work involving the election of the next president of the United States. There's no downplaying that. Just because someone is dumpy and has a beard and is from middle America, and just because you look at that and you laugh and you kind of say, oh yeah, you know, he's a threat. Yes. If this were any other country that I just described, what, just a country, not the United States, one of their most significant political buildings was breached by protesters, which halted calculation, right, and legitimacy of a Democratic election. Anybody who's reasonable would see the severity of that. But because of many things, some of which I talked about in the last podcast, Critical Race Theory podcast, know, some of it being race, some of it being an entitlement on the right, thinking that in this battle of good and evil, that they are good and therefore entitled to do certain things in the name of good. And within a realm of Christianity or nationalism even. Right, that somehow it's okay. You know, it kind of, I don't know, downplay it, joke about it, say, yeah, they got a little bit out of hand, but what about, no, what about nothing? Okay, a federal building was, where do we go back to? The War of 1812, when the White House was burned? Okay, I digress, but. And, you know, January 6th is only one event. Yeah, the actions of Kyle Rittenhouse, right? A kid who, because he's a kid, I think in many ways had thoughts put into his mind. But the fact that those thoughts are put into his mind and the fact that he felt safe in his actions, I don't know. I mean, we don't need to go back to the Patriot movement and all of the long lines of shootings from the right. We don't even need to get into that. I think that this document has been answered, and that, you know, the conflict is going to be fought with much more than just spirit. But back to this introduction. We outnumber these people 100 to 1. And again, stop. Just stop. This is that silent majority speak. This is something that's been, I mean, you know, Nixon made this popular, but this is the entitlement, right? The belief that they are the majority. This is something that's always been there with the right. I mean, this is what Hitler was telling people when he was a nobody in beer pubs. This is the idea, right? That the government or a segment of people or another country or what have you, it kind of doesn't matter, right? That a minority is holding you down, and that a majority in this context would be white, or people who act within that realm of being white, I suppose, socially acceptable in that manner, but Christian, patriotic. Okay, so we outnumber these people 100 to 1. And only through unity, hierarchy, and order can we hope to defeat them. And this is what emboldened people to storm the Capitol. When you have the belief that you're the majority and you see many elections in your lifetime prove otherwise, I mean, numerically, math, material reality, you know, when that conflicts with your conspiracy theory, essentially, you have cognitive dissonance. And this creates anxiety, right? This is what agitates people. This is when people go out and sometimes commit acts of violence. But for people who don't decide to commit acts of violence, you know, Jim Atkinson, if you don't know who he is, look him up. For people who don't decide to go right down that pathway, they have to seek consonance. And I talked about this a little bit in the critical race theory too, but it applies equally here. And so you create the consonance by believing a conspiracy theory, right? If you believe, like this document states, we outnumber these people 100 to 1, and you see an election in which the opposition is elected, then either you're wrong and your conspiracy is wrong, or that the election was fraudulent. And to keep that consonance, right, to avoid cognitive dissonance, like people in a cult trying to be deprogrammed. I mean, that's not really a great word, but because that can be dangerous, and there's some old practices that are no longer used, but still, you know, moving away from this type of indoctrination, you know, whatever this might be, right, is difficult and psychologically complicated. And the answer, right, so we outnumber these people 100 to 1. The answer from this red pill PDF is only through unity. And I think in unity, we have that overarching belief, you know, that good versus evil, that evil is a literal force, right? The devil is literal. Only through unity, hierarchy, which to me, I mean, it's very militaristic, of course, you know, hierarchy, but also social hierarchy too. And, you know, what implications does that have? I mean, I think it's very clear for women and for minorities what that means. And order. Can we hope to defeat them? And, you know, in this unity of vision and hierarchy, right, kind of falling into line militaristically and understanding where you stand in this abstract caste system as opposed to your enemies, I think that ending with order is a significant thing too. How many times did we hear in a Trump presidency that he is the president of law and order, that he wanted to crack down on protesters after George Floyd was killed by Derek Chauvin, that he wanted to send in the U.S. military into Portland, you know, as local protesters are engaged in years and years of grievances versus the Portland Police Department with a horrendous history, you know, of itself, that got kind of lumped in with Black Lives Matter, but stood independently from that as well. So yeah, I think we saw what law and order begins to look like. And I think that these people believe Trump might be doing what they wanted. However, that he didn't succeed. And of course, that's not his fault. It's the Satanists, the pedophiles, the communists, everybody else, people like you and me. And, you know, in that way, they're right, because I didn't vote for Trump. Then the conversation kind of moves on, and it goes into a more QAnon stream, in which it's essentially saying you have to accept these things to be Christian, right? And I'm not going to read from this document, but it basically says that you have to accept that pedophile rings exist to be saved, because these are the acts of the devil. And if you don't recognize the devil for what it is, then you're basically on the devil's side. So it brings back in that core Christian good versus bad dialectic, I suppose we could call it. The document says you will find solace in that what you seek, if fake, will feed your souls. So it's saying here, and I had some ideas, but I think it's saying that when you see things being presented to you as false, that it's almost a Christian work in a way. It's almost, you know, a revelation kind of, that you're able to see the truth in this context. Not all red pill things are this Christian, but I do think the right is this Christian. But what, you know, what I think of when I first see this is, like, you know, think about, like, Alex Jones and Sandy Hook, and think about the false flag conversations that happened a few years ago. You'll find solace in that what you see a fake will feed your souls. it's a very strange, you know, again, it's saying that, you know, you need to believe in conspiracy theories, that basic things aren't true. I mean, maybe like the vaccine, right? Like, you know, basic facts about this vaccine are inaccurate being shared on social media, right? But that believing that conspiracy, right, these false flags, will feed your soul. Yeah, to me, that's like a revelation. The truths myself and others tell are their greatest fear and our most powerful weapon in the war to come. It's never good when someone says that there's a coming war. And, you know, just a little bit earlier, the document had stated, you know, what is this war going to be? And I kind of posited that, well, we know now what it's going to be. I mean, it's physical and we've seen that. It's militaristic. But again, you know, the promise of a coming war is very Christian end times to me. I think it, again, gets into those anti-Semitic global conspiracies that were transitioned to communism in the later 20th century. But regardless, the document says a war is coming. And then the introduction ends with a quote from Saint Anthony the Great. And that quote is, "A time is coming when men will go mad. And when they see someone who is not mad, they will attack him, saying, 'You are mad. You are not like us.'" And I think that this is how people on the right kind of bridge that gap again of cognitive dissonance. I mean, you know, when you get into these isolated communities, especially things like Telegram, where you're just following certain people, and or when you get into like 4chan and into these subcultures, you know, specific boards. You know, I think that at some point in the beginning, you have to recognize what you're doing is not normal, right? That you're engaging with some crazy ideas, but that this is the ointment that kind of soothes that, right? This quote, that, you know, you are the one that is correct. Racism doesn't exist, right? Those that want to divide people artificially in the United States do that so that they can control them. And we know why, because if you go far enough in that narrative, it becomes a Christian idea of you know, Satanism or whatever. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, it could just be, you know, many different things, right? It could be anti-lockdown sentiment. You know, it could be, you know, maybe you weren't anywhere near being on the far right, and, you know, you eat tofu and you don't take prescription medicine, and you live a quote unquote clean lifestyle. And then COVID happened, and all of a sudden, you know, people are saying you have to take this vaccination, and you're like, my immune system works fine. I mean, you're wrong, but it's, again, a time is coming when men will go mad. And when they see someone who is not mad, they will attack him, saying, "You are mad. You are not like us. You know, like I've always been like this. You're the people that are crazy now." Right. Maybe it's the conversation surrounding transgender people, gender pronouns, you know, whatever, feminism, any of these things, right? But I think to initially bridge that gap between what is clearly in front of you and the material reality, And then the process of becoming indoctrinated, right? And moving more into an echo chamber of people that are saying the same things you are, of getting a feedback loop, you know, going, of becoming more and more extreme, you know, moving from a Facebook group to maybe some Twitter personalities that have YouTube shows, or, you know, maybe they've been banned from YouTube, and you start getting into other platforms, you know, like Telegram, et cetera. And whatever that process is, that you slowly begin to feel that you're the same person and everybody else around you is the crazy person. And I mean, in essence, that's the process you go through when you join a cult, right? You isolate yourself, and you insulate yourself with your community, right? Of like-minded people who share the same belief system as you do. And, you know, part of that belief system is that all of the others, and that's everybody except you and your group, right, are mad, essentially, are part of this thing, you know, for which you have the truth to see, and of which, for some reason, nobody else does. And there are some very clear conversations I've had, just some personal interactions with people, and not even the far right, just mainstream conservative people. You know, if, for instance, there is not an issue of police brutality, right? Blue Lives Matter, just listen to the police. Okay, fine. Well, then, you know, why are there, you know, why are all these events happening of police brutality, mostly geared towards minority people? You know, I might ask that in the conversation. And there's either denial, right? Or some type of you know, manufactured argument trying to show statistics to disprove that, or, you know, to not even engage in that conversation, essentially. But then, you know, following that conversation of, you know, it goes down the line of, well, you know, people don't, you need to listen to police. And, yeah. Well, okay, so are you telling me that there's like a large percentage of minority people that choose not to listen to the police? Why is that? Well, you know, then it's because of Democrats and the welfare system and you know, that Democrats are really the racist ones because they hold these people down on welfare. Really, there is no racism. These people could go out there and succeed, but they've been brainwashed by Democrats to think that they can't. Okay, so now you're telling me that a very large percentage of a race of people essentially have been brainwashed, like they're not smart enough to know that Democrats are really, you know, not doing what they should be doing, and really Democrats are. So this, you know, whatever the percentile is, I think it's in the 80 percentile of African Americans, for instance, that vote Democrat. So, you know, this huge percentage of this racial population are too stupid to understand that they're voting against their best interests, right? And this is where that cognitive dissonance is happening, because, you know, this person is trying to say they're not racist, but ultimately this is where it's going, right? But I digress from that. I think in summary, we can see where this is going, right? Where the journey, what's the journey, right? Any good story tells us, you know, kind of gives us a hint of where we're going without telling us what's going to happen on the way. But I think that there's some soft pill stuff talking about the topics that are acceptable to mainstream discussions, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, maybe bashing Bill Clinton. Then there's a lot of Christianity and conspiracy right, brought in. But, you know, so far there's no anti-Semitism yet. There's no racism yet. There's no sexism yet. It does, however, end with this quote, which states essentially that, you know, once you find this truth, right? Or conversely, if the world goes crazy around you, right? That, you know, the people who are the crazy ones are going to be the ones who call you crazy. And that's the leaping off point to getting pilled, right? And I think it's along with so many other things we talked about, the entitlement of ownership of what it is to be an American, of Christianity, of really race, again, even if it's more in actions and culture than it is actual DNA, of nationalism, you know, critical race theory, that the podcast I just made, you know, is a great example of that, right? The inability to self-critique, right? That it's the world around you, and that where we're going in this conversation, right, moving forward, is going to show you just how crazy everybody else is, right? You're not the crazy one. And believe me, we'll get to the chapters that talk about Holocaust denial, George Soros, and all the crazy stuff that these people believe.